Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Very pleased now to be joined in the Sunbury Motors Studio by Mark Brennan of Fight On State. Mark, welcome. It's great to have you with us.
Great to be here. Beautiful day. Got a beautiful studio here. Happy to be here with you and Jason.
All right. Let's get to it with an article that you wrote for Fight On State. It's listening to James Franklin, but it's also trying to read him as well. And
yeah.
You came away with an interesting read about a long-term commitment.
Yeah, well, you know, one of the questions, and I don't think he gets it. I haven't heard him get it at a bunch of the stops on the coaches' caravan. And I really have not heard fans ask him, you know, James, how long are you going to stick around? But that's the question. I don't know about you, Steve, but I get that all the time. It's like people seem to really like James Franklin, love James Franklin, everything he's doing. But the question I always get is, yeah, but how long is he going to stay? And I think there's, you know, an obvious reason for that, because Joe Paterno stayed for, including as an assistant, what was it, 60, however many
62
years?
62 years.
Yeah. And then Bill O'Brien stays for two. So right. I think it's a natural question, and I said a lot of people are wondering about this.
Right.
And he basically said, you know, first of all, he tried to say, I don't know if that's a question for me, but it is a question for you, James, but he did end up answering it and said, you know, where else would I go? And right. His position on it, I was fortunate enough to get a one-on-one with him on one of the coaches' caravan stops. His position on it is that everything is here at Penn State for him to do what he needs to do.
Right.
And the one kind of caveat, the only caveat that he threw in there is that, you know, everybody needs to be pulling in the same direction.
Right.
Which is obviously the case. I mean, after everything that's gone on here, if everybody is on board, and I tend to agree with them. I mean, I think if they get into a position where everybody is on the same page, you have a program that has the facilities, that has the tradition, you know, say what you will about football in Pennsylvania, but there are still enough players in this region to have a good, solid recruiting base. So really, you know, an unbelievable fan base, great alumni association, great stadium. All these things are in place. And, you know, his point is, where else would you go from here?
Right.
So, you know, the one thing I specifically asked him about was the NFL, because obviously Bill O'Brien aspired to go to the NFL and made no bones about it. And it's kind of interesting. I mean, the one thing that I took out of that interview, that portion of the interview, because I'll have other stories coming from it, that I thought, listen, most coaches, if you ask them how long you want to stay, they're going to say, well, you know, I love it here. This is great. This is tremendous. There were some other things there that I thought made it more legitimate coming from James Franklin. But the part about him being more comfortable as a college coach, I don't think there's any question about that.
Right.
I don't think anybody could argue or debate that. You see the way he operates, the way he deals with people, the way he deals with kids. And by kids, I mean players, because
sure.
As you get older, like I am, you refer to them as kind of the younger generation. But yeah, I mean, he just seems to be more of a natural fit at the college level. And I think he understands that. So, you know, the takeaway, Steve, you could only take somebody at their word until they prove that you shouldn't.
Right.
And since he's been at Penn State, he's not proven that we shouldn't take his word on anything. And the fact of the matter is, I tend to believe him when he says, where else would I go? Again, the only caveat there is if, you know, he doesn't get the support he needs, but it seems as if he is, or if the fans don't rally behind him, but I think they are, you know, that could be the issue. But it seems to me as if he's going to be here long term.
Well, it's not as if Joe Paterno didn't hear from the Raiders, didn't hear from the Steelers,
right.
Didn't hear from the Giants, and then, of course,
Patriots.
The most overt one of all
right.
was the New England Patriots and Billy Sullivan. Wasn't like he didn't hear all of that. I mean, the older fans here remember those times that happened. What's happened here is that, and I pointed this out last year just as a slice of perspective, after doing a pregame show with one coach all these years, I was doing a pregame show with my fourth coach in 30 games.
Right.
Before the Ireland game.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's why I think people get uptight as to whether people are staying.
Yeah, and he gets that. That's the other part about it. Like, a lot of times if you ask a coach a question that maybe isn't the most comfortable thing, you'll get not... He never gives you blowback, but he'll be funny about stuff. If he thinks it's not a great question, he's really sharp. But he completely, and I have video of it up there, and I like being able to put video of some of these questions up because sometimes people say, well, maybe that was taken out of context. You could see the actual part of the Q&A where people can say, well, no, I don't, you know, this is exactly how he was coming across.
You can read facial expressions.
Right.
And so it's all part of it. You don't get that quizzical look like, oh, where are you going here?
Right, right. And that's, and really, to me, I asked him two questions in that portion of the interview, Steve. And his answers covered the entire thing was just over 5 minutes. So outside of a long-winded person like me, people, if they're not comfortable with a question, usually won't go on like that. And I thought he was very comfortable with it. And it was – let me give a little bit more perspective on how this came about. I got a heads up that I was getting a one-on-one with him 25 minutes before it was going to happen.
Sure.
So you kind of – when you're on these coaches' caravans, it's the same questions being asked over and over, and you don't want to ask your best questions. I'm just saying how it is as a reporter when there's 18 other reporters around. So I get a heads up that I'm going to get a one-on-one, and I was able to ask some different, not necessarily off the wall, but some different things that maybe have not been asked quite so frequently.
Well, and that I remember a few years ago just sitting down, and it was just a chit-chat with Billy Packer. And I asked him something about interviews, and he said, I always try to come up with one question that they haven't heard.
Right.
Which, in a scenario like this, is not easy when so many questions are asked.
Well, there were 12 stops on the caravan, and he did a press conference before every one.
Right.
So, and then he also answered questions from the fans or the alumni at every one. So how are you going to come up with and then you have to do it on 20 minutes' notice. But I had some things, obviously, in the back of my head that I was thinking about for a while.
But this is a two-prong answer. The two-prong answer is, Mark, that you're telling the fan base, hey, look, my intention is to be here a long time. Everything's in place. You're also telling recruits, I intend to be here a long time. Everything's in place.
Absolutely. And the other part of this, and a skeptic would say, well, what else is he going to say? You know, what is no? Well, I really want to get out of here. Well, actually, O'Brien did say I aspire to coach at the NFL level. Right. But
Franklin has been in the NFL. He was, you know, a year with Mike Sherman at Green Bay. So at least he has a taste and understanding.
Well, and he's also part of the minority coaching system where he was with three different teams actually for short periods of time. So he was there. But I think, you know, one of the points I'd like to get across, or I tried to get across in the piece, was it wasn't just that he answered the question, but I think he put a lot of thought into the answer. And it didn't come across to me. And again, listen, you know, if he ends up leaving next year,
you can only take stock in what he tells
that's
you.
That's what I'm saying. And for whatever anybody wants to say, when I've asked him direct questions, he's given me direct answers on stuff since I've been here. Now, that's not every single instance. Listen, after practice, you may ask him about, you may try to ask him about an injury, and you're not going to get a direct answer on that. But I mean the important stuff. You know, if something important comes up and you ask him something directly, he's been good with me.
Recruiting wise, even though I can't talk about it, you can. They have 10 verbals right now.
Four offensive linemen, which is huge. Yep. I mean, they really have. You know, the one area where they have to pick it up is defensive tackle. You look at the last couple years, and it's just one of those things where when you had the limits that they had, it was going to impact them at different positions, kind of in waves. So you look at the team now and you say, wow, when you look at Penn State's defensive tackle situation right now, it's probably about as good as anybody in the nation.
Yeah, your starting tandem of defensive tackles would be in an argument. Who's among the best tandems in the country? They would be in the argument in the conversation.
And then you add solid backups, guys who played well last year.
Barney and Cothran.
Right. And then
Antoine
you have
White.
Salt, White, who's an up-and-comer.
Yeah, he's a redshirt freshman.
Right.
Yeah.
So you look at that group of tackles, and you're like, wow, this is a good group of tackles. But then you look behind that.
Right.
And that's where some recruiting struggles. I don't even want to say recruiting struggles, because they were getting who they could get the last few years. under the constraints that they had. So even though sanctions were lifted, it's not – everybody thinks that these things just immediately happened. So they have to – the one area, Steve, where they really have to get after it now is that defensive tackle. Because offensive line, I'll tell you what, that was clearly an area of need. I won't put you in a bad position by throwing names out there, but, you know, they got – you know, one kid from Pennsylvania who was just elevated to a five-star on our list right now, you know, they're getting these the kind of offensive linemen that James Franklin talked about, bigger kids, taller kids, longer kids. And now it's got to transfer over to – now that they're starting to load up there, now they can transfer, I think, over to the defensive line. And you know, actually had the opportunity to talk to Sean Spencer in general terms about recruiting. And I could see where – you know, you talk about Herb Hand being a good recruiter. Mm-hmm. You know, I could see where Spencer and kind of his enthusiasm. Yeah. So I think they're going to be okay there, but it's an area where they have to pick it up. They only got one kid who's a natural D lineman last year, and he'll probably end up being a pretty good player, but they still have to really pick it up there in that area, in my view.
That's kid from Wisconsin.
Yeah, and the other area that James mentioned, obviously, is special teams.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they could not afford to really spend scholarships on kickers and punters. But the difficult part of that is, okay, now you think you can.
Yeah, one quick caveat on that. I don't mean to, sorry to interrupt you, Mark. They found out late in each process.
Right.
In his first two recruiting
absolutely
cycles that they could have a few extra kids. And they weren't told in August. They were told in the middle or the late January. And I think that's what has affected that.
Well, think about it. There are probably two, three scholarship-worthy kickers in the nation.
Yes, that's it.
So, and do you think that everybody isn't going after them? So if you're in their shoes last year, if you're in Penn State shoes last year, you just immediately say, we're not even going to worry about this because the risk-reward just doesn't make sense. Well, now all of a sudden the risk-reward makes a lot of sense because not only can you afford a scholarship, but you also are looking at a situation where listen, we've seen a ton of walk-ons as specialists who have come and done an absolutely great job, from John Bruno to, you know, you name it, guys who have come in here and just been terrific.
Mm-hmm.
Robbie Gold.
Yeah.
I mean, there's just been so many of these kids who have done it. But you could also say, listen, as Penn State, if I'm a Penn State coach, I can say to a potential scholarship kicker, we don't have anybody on scholarship now. So you're going to come in and have an opportunity to compete right away. Now, if these kids are better than you, you're not going to play. But you should have an opportunity to come in and get that done. And then the other thing that, you know, from a recruiting standpoint, I think the fact that they get all these grants back, you look at their roster right now.
It's unbalanced.
Well, that's what I was going to say.
It's very unbalanced.
They have 39 initial scholarship players with freshman eligibility
freshman
this year.
Freshman or redshirt freshman.
Right, guys who have never played before. There are 39 of them of the 82.
Right.
And that's not counting – that 82 counts some walk-ons who were given scholarships.
Like Ron Walker.
Yeah, so you're talking about half of the roster has never played a game. Right. Now, that's – so everybody's like, oh, well, they're back. Well, these kids all have to learn. But where that's going to help is even if these kids are young – you're going to start seeing better and better players on their special teams kind of across the board. And I think you're going to see better coverage. You're going to see better returns. You're going to see more blocks. So it's not just the actual specialists themselves. It's the ability to get young defensive backs, young linebackers, young receivers, young running backs on these special teams units to get some things done.
There was one point in 2018 where 8 of the 11 on kickoff coverage were walk-ons.
Right. And that's... so people are saying, what's going on here? And this is no offense to those kids because they're out there playing their hearts out.
Look, that has nothing to do with that.
They're out there doing the best they could absolutely do, but they're going against teams that have a bunch of young scholarship guys out there. And so I think you're going to see that area improve.
Yeah, I mean, there's no question about that. But the unbalancing class, there's been so many dominoes to this. You talk about the linemen, and you mentioned specifically the defensive line, how they're working on offensive line now. Bill O'Brien did a lot of research and look, you know, how do you handle sanctions? How do you recruit in sanctions? Well, his thought was, look, let's go out and get all the skilled players, quote, that we can get, and we'll just fit everything around because that's what they were recruiting under. Well, now the door is open to make up for that, but you have to, quote, make up for it.
Right. Well, if I could be critical of one thing that Bill O'Brien did recruiting-wise, and it's really the overall what he was able to do,
sure,
faced with what he was doing. But even before the sanctions hit, Steve, there was a an event, the local Football Hall of Fame chapter. I forget exactly what it's called. But it was in the spring of
the National
his
Football
first year.
Foundation
yes,
Hall of Fame.
Yes, thank you.
Yes.
I knew you could help me with that. And it was out at the Penn Stater.
Yes.
And he spoke at that, and he came. One of the things he said was, this was before the sanctions even hit,
right,
that he was shocked at how many offensive linemen Penn State had.
Yeah, he said they had too many.
They had way too many.
Yeah, and not enough defensive backs.
Right. So then all of a sudden, they get hit with the sanctions. So he already wanted to cut down on the number of O linemen, which may well have been a smart thing to do. I don't know. But then you have the sanctions thrown in, and now all of a sudden, uh-oh. So I think that was part of it. And frankly, you know, I think the last few years under Joe, I just don't think they were recruiting really well, generally speaking, on the O-line. There were some players who were good players, but generally speaking, it kind of fell off toward the end. So I think you're seeing it pick back up.
I think what you had with him is that you had a starting unit where most of it was really good, but if somebody moved on, there wasn't that next person up to step in. They didn't quite have that depth.
Well, and the other issue with the offensive line, as everybody knows, it's the one area, even beyond quarter. I mean, if you would have told me that Penn State was going to have a true freshman quarterback who was going to do what Hackenberg did, I would have never believed it. I would not, and that absolutely proved me wrong. I always thought quarterback was the most difficult. Offensive line, clearly the most difficult position, in my view, to come in and start and or be a contributor as a true freshman. So when you're dealing with these sanctions and dealing with these situations where guys have to come in and contribute immediately, you know, think about last year. I mean, in my view, their best offensive lineman was Andrew Nelson.
Yes, he will. I agree with
that. And, you know, for whatever anybody wants to say about Donovan Smith and his potential, I thought he underachieved. But people, doesn't it seem now like Andrew Nelson's like a senior?
I know.
He was a redshirt freshman last year, never played a game.
And had never until this year done a winter program.
Right, because
he was hurt.
He was bumped up, barely played in the spring, and that's my point. So when people look at the struggles of the offensive line last year, you do have to put it into some perspective and realize that, now, are they going to be gangbusters better this year? I don't know, but I think they will be better overall because everybody has all the key factors, most of the key factors have played. It's going to come down to...
You now have seven guys seven guys that have already played and at least understand some semblance of game speed.
And if they are going to rely on Palmer, a Paris Palmer, to JUCO transfer at one of the tackle spots, then he's going to have to come along. But to me, that is a better situation than the one they were in last year, where you had one guy with starting experience, and to me, again, an underachiever. I think we could be more critical of guys once they're in the NFL. And everybody else, to me... Listen, I thought everybody got better as the season went along, and I think that showed itself in the bowl game.
Yeah.
Guys like Mangiero, guys like Gaia, you know, all those guys I thought got better. But I think it's a better situation this year than it was last year going into the preseason.
Yeah, guys that know how to play.
They've been through it a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's in the end, that makes a big difference. Game experience means something. Finally, this is... they will tell you this is as brutal a month as they have to get ready for the season. It's, you know, people talk about the winter program, but Dwight Gault will tell you that June is a big month for them. What are you hearing to this point about how this part of the process is going as they get ready? Well, finally, you see everybody at Lift for Life, but still.
Well, that's the whole thing, is that they can afford to beat the you-know-what out of these guys at this time of year because there's really nothing to prepare for.
Yeah.
I shouldn't say that. Preparing for Lift for Life is huge, and Lift for Life is
they're preparing for the season.
Right,
this is a tough stretch.
Right. But yeah, I mean, let's put it this way. I've not heard anything bad, which is usually...
That's good.
Right. That's usually the best part of it. Have not heard about any key injuries. Have not heard about...
It was this time
slacking.
A year ago we heard about Ben Klein as an example.
Right. So I think everybody ought to be collectively... knocking on wood if you're a Penn State fan, but just in terms of having a chance to talk to a couple of the assistants on the coaches' caravan, you know, the one thing Sean Spencer said, and again, I'm sure he was knocking on wood as he said it, you know, D-line have some key guys to replace there, but, he loves the depth, but he was just happy they came out of the spring healthy.
Yeah.
Wide receiver, I know we didn't see some guys in the blue-white game, but to hear Josh Gattis say it, you know, going into the season, they should be just fine in terms of health. So I think across the board right now, again, knock on wood, I hope I'm not putting in the kiss of death. If the football staff's listening, it's not my fault. Steve's making me talk about this.
You don't blaming me. I'm just sitting here.
I'm just rambling on, but that's the one thing that yeah, hopefully when we're able to cover Lift for Life, yeah, everybody's there, happy, healthy, ready to go, raise some money for the fight against kidney cancer.
And that'll be Saturday, July 11th. Mark, yeah, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Mark Brennan, Fight On State. Final half hour. The ramblings and musings of Kevin Herr on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Nothing. Nada. Zilch.
That's what you'll pay this summer to drive a brand new Kia from Sunbury Motors Kia. I wanna see you in a Kia. Sunbury Motors Kia. That's right. You can own a brand new in-stock Kia and pay nothing for the summer. That's 0% APR for up to 66 months. And Kia will pay your first 3 months. Sunbury Motors Kia has a great selection of 2015 Kia Optimas, Optima Hybrids, Fortes, and the award-winning Sedona van. Take that summer vacation. Do those outdoor summer repairs and pay nothing for the summer on your new Kia. It's worry-free driving. No payments. And Kia's 10-year, 100,000-mile limited powertrain warranty. And this just in. Kia is now offering 0% APR financing for up to 66 months, plus $500 bonus cash for qualified buyers on 2015 sold. Summertime and the drive is easy with the help of Sunbury Motors Kia on the strip at Hummel's Wharf and at sunburymotors.com.
0% APR financing, all qualified customers through KMS. Restrictions apply. See dealer for details.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Keywords 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Kevin is driving another great Sunbury Motors vehicle this week.
Yeah, we're driving and talking about the 2015 Ford C-Max Energy. C-Max Energy is not only electric, it also has a hybrid engine that combines the ability to run like a regular hybrid with the gasoline engine as well as recharging. So on average, you're going to look at about 88 miles to the gallon on highway. That is not, I did not misspeak. It is 88 miles to the gallon between the electric, the gas, and the hybrid engine. It's something you should check out. And features that you wouldn't believe in a hybrid vehicle, including HD radio, a Sony HD radio system, plus backup camera, sensors all the way around the vehicle. So that gives you one of the best features if you've ever had to get your driver's license and had to parallel park. It has park assist that will help you find a spot that will be big enough for you to get into with the vehicle, and it will actually steer the steering wheel for you. All you have to do is put your foot on the brake and ease into the parking spot. So you'll never have to worry about, am I close enough to the curb ever again? And you won't have to worry about going to the gas station a whole lot either. Find out more about the 2015 C-Max Energy. This is the SEL edition. It's available at Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street, Sunbury. You can find out details at sunburymotors.com, on my Facebook page, and when you follow me on Twitter, at Kevin Herr.
Let's get everybody up to date now on what's going on in baseball today. Pirates will play tonight. They will take on the Brewers, trying to avoid a sweep, by the way. Charlie Morton tonight for the Pirates, dynamic at home in his last 10 starts at home. He is 5-2 with a 1.98 ERA. This season, he's 3-0. And he'll be opposed by Kyle Loesch, who has an ERA of 6.59, or Kevin Herr-esque.
Actually, that's not bad for me.
Oh, boy. The Phillies lost today to the
Reds. There's a shocker.
Oh, you're just so bitter.
That's a sweep. Bring out the brooms. The Reds swept them.
Scored 4 runs in the first inning, by the way, which ended up being their undoing. The Phillies did have 10 hits today, but none when they really counted.
None when anybody was actually on base to score.
Ben Rivera went 2-for-5, now hitting .270. Herrera went 1-for-4, .255. Your man Utley went 0-for-3 again, .185. Michael Franco 1-for-4, .286. Ryan Howard at 1-for-4 with a run scored, .240.
Jeff Francoeur, 2-for-4, 264. Cesar Hernandez went 1-for-3, scored a run. He's up to 221. Rupp, 2-for-4, hitting 239. And, yeah.
Have they been mathematically eliminated from the playoffs yet?
They're 2 games away from the magic number.
That's scary.
The Yankees have won 7 in a row. They were down most of this game to Gio Gonzalez and the Nationals. The Nationals have just scored in the top of the 11th inning and now lead the Yankees 5-4 heading to the bottom of the 11th in the Bronx. Cardinals lead Colorado 3-0. That game is in the bottom half of the 5th inning. Earlier today, the Blue Jays hit 4 home runs and beat Miami 7-2. And, of course, the Women's World Cup does continue. Switzerland won today 3-0. Team USA beat Germany 2-1.
That's supposed to be a tough bracket.
That's a huge win. That's a huge win for the United States. They won 2-1 this afternoon. You see Rocky Rodriguez scored for Costa Rica, by the way?
No.
Rocky Rodriguez, Penn State player, fabulous player. And she scored. Costa Rica won 1-0, I think. Either they tied 1-1 or 1-1-0. She scored the Costa Rican goal. She was telling me that she came here to Penn State and English was a struggle. And her and I were together at a speaking engagement for the endowment of athletics, and they selected her as the athlete to speak. You couldn't tell in a million years whether she was from Costa Rica or Sunbury. Smooth. And on the field, she's outstanding. I mean, she's just terrific. But the United States did win today. Let's see.
I didn't realize they were scheduled to play today.
Well, this is the men today. The men beat the number.
Okay. Thank you. I thought the women. I didn't think the women were scheduled to play until the weekend. But, well, actually, yeah, I guess it's Friday.
They'll play the weekend. I just got sidetracked because Rocky scored. But the U.S. Outshot Germany 13-12. So yeah, they had a big day today. Michael Bradley did play, so it's good.
Now is that just is it? What did the men play in? If you mentioned it, I missed it. I'm sorry. I know
The international. It was just an international friendly.
Okay.
But still,
all right.
But still, beating Germany, huge deal. They
oh
won.
No question about it. I just didn't realize. I didn't know if that was like a tournament of some sort or just one of those friendly. No. What do they call them? Friendlies.
And they beat them in Germany. Bobby Wood scored the game winner in the 88th minute. So it's huge.
Well, the U.S. women in Group D is supposed to be in a really difficult group with Sweden, Nigeria, and I think Australia. Well, yeah definitely Australia because that's who they beat the other day.
Yeah, I won that 3-1. So there you go. Kevin has been going on and on now for most of the show about how much he loves LeBron James.
I think he's the best in the game. Really?
By the way,
what gave you that idea?
By the way, Adidas is out. Nike is in as the official uniform of the NBA beginning in the 2017-2018 season. It's an 8-year deal. Kevin loves news like that. Orioles play Red Sox tonight, Camden Yards. And the Mets play the Giants tonight in search of a hit.
Do you know how the uniform supplier affects me? Everything with an Adidas logo now for the NBA is going to be half price this week. That's what it really comes down to.
When the new Nike uniform came out for the NFL, did you buy one because Nike had it?
No, I bought the old uniform for the old Reebok uniform because it was half price.
Oh, jeez. By the way, Mark Brennan came in here to the Sunbury Motor Studio today, mm-hmm. and he was wearing just a Phillies jersey, but no number or name on the back.
Well, right now there's nobody to wear a number or name of the Phillies, so.
But I'm saying though, but that's to me that's the right way to go. I mean, it was actual Phillies game jersey, just no name or number on the back.
Camp start in less than 2 months for the NFL.
The what?
Camp start in less than 2 months for the NFL.
Yeah, I'm just talking about a jersey in general.
No, I know. I'm talking about baseball, I mean, though. I'm just
like why can't you get a 43 jersey for the Steelers and not have his name on the back?
I don't think I've ever. Well, I shouldn't say that. I have seen jerseys that have no name on it, but it's because I don't know what the number is. So I don't know the name that it corresponds with. I mean, have you ever seen a jersey hang up? And now, this is a pro jersey, not a college one, but a pro jersey that doesn't have a recognizable number or name on the back. No, you have to order those.
Yeah. Well, I don't know.
Because nobody wants them. That's my. But it's because nobody really wants them. You can't go in to the local sporting goods store and get 76 in an Eagles uniform that doesn't have a name on it. But you can sure find a few quarterback numbers with names on it. Or you could find a running back number here and there with a name on it, or a wide receiver's number. But you're not going to find just generic jerseys very often. And if they are generic jerseys, they are truly generic jerseys. They're not. They're a knockoff of of the actual jerseys. Or the licensed jerseys, I should say.
Everybody's different. I don't see the appeal of having somebody else's name on my back. Now, you can explain to me what the appeal of that is, but I don't see it.
No, I don't think I can explain it to you to where you'd understand it. And that's not a diss, it's just that's the way you are. I mean, that's fine. You do not have players. But when you were growing up, go back to, try and remember back to when you were 12. What was your favorite sport when you were 12?
My favorite athlete was Babe Ruth. No.
My favorite athlete was Ty Cobb. Christy Mathewson was pretty good, too.
I love Christy Mathewson. He was so cool.
I remember when Doubleday was a general. Was he a general? I don't remember now. Before you got into the business of sports, you were at one time a fan.
But nobody whose jersey I wanted.
Okay.
I mean, there's no jersey I wanted. You know, I just didn't. Now, I always liked the team. I mean, like, you know, you look at certain jerseys, you go, yeah, that's a really cool jersey, you know, whatever, the color scheme, whatever, or how simple it is, whatever it happens to be. But no.
If you're an Eagles fan right now, and you want an Eagles jersey, let's say you for some reason that there's quarterback jerseys only available, what jersey would you get?
Me?
No, this is a listener style question. If you're an Eagles fan, if you're an Eagles fan, would it be a Sanchez jersey? Would it be a Sam Bradford jersey? Would it be a Tebow jersey? Or would you not want any one of those jerseys?
What's Tebow's number, 11?
Did they give him a number? I haven't seen a picture of him with a jersey on.
I thought they gave him a jersey. Yeah.
Well, I'm sure they did. The last time I saw it, though, it was still a question of what the jersey was. Yeah, 11 is the one I see a lot of places.
Okay.
But it wasn't official the last time I saw it.
Okay. All right. Yeah, just, you know.
Yeah, back in April, it was listed, I think, as, I don't even think they had a number on it. I think they just had a zero on it.
Well, he, I don't know.
But according to the NFL shop, which, by the way, has its own Tebow gear section, it is 11.
Okay. I wonder how popular that's going to be with fans. I mean, because, you know, I mean, he really is not going to play.
If he makes the team, I'll bet you he makes the team as a two-point specialist.
Yeah, I just don't know.
Can you afford to have a two-point specialist in the NFL? You've got so many specialist positions. I mean, now you have, in high school and college, you a lot of times, well, maybe not college as much, but definitely in high school, you have a lot of guys playing special teams to give guys a rest from the starting 22, or you've got guys playing every direction, special teams and offense, defense. But in the NFL, they have specialty players all over the place now. Can you afford to have one more?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question. I mean, a lot of teams, for example, their place kicker's the place kicker, but the punter's the kickoff guy.
Yeah. Or that you have a long snapper as well as a center.
Right. Now, remember Mark Brennan talking about... he was talking about specialists and so forth, about Bill O'Brien and offensive linemen. And that's part of the NFL mentality. The NFL usually only carries 7 offensive linemen. I mean, you know, that's why, you know, he talked about, you know, you got too many linemen here. Well, yeah, based on the NFL model, they did. But that's not the college model. And, you know, he was talking about that.
You were asking about the sales. I found an article from one of the Philadelphia television stations, NBC 10 in Philadelphia, from I think it was last month or the month after, that Tebow's jersey was one of the top sellers for the Eagles anyway.
It's amazing. It's amazing his draw and his lure.
Yeah, back at the end of April, his $70 youth size, $95 women's size, and $99.95 men's size were already the top 3 sellers on the Eagles website. And he's the 4th-string quarterback.
I mean, he's as much a contributor to the team as the copy machine.
Here's the thing. He's not getting his paycheck based on the way he's playing. It's how well his stuff sells to make the team money.
Right. No question. All right. We'll come back, wrap it up in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. All right, all you need is the voice of John Facenda. Yeah. It's not quite the same as the thing about the Raiders, but that's fine.
The autumn wind is a raider. Pillaging just for fun.
Yeah. He was a nice man. I met him only one time. And just very nice man, very classy.
Yeah, here's a fun Facebook question. And you love these type of questions. These have no relevance, no point whatsoever, and there's no right or wrong answer. Who has the best fight song?
Who's the best fight song?
Yeah, it could be anything. Could be college, NFL, could be different sports, doesn't matter.
Jeez, I don't know.
We have to throw that up on our Facebook page, see what happens.
Okay, well, I'm sure we'll get some great response to that. best fight song. It's like, you know, what do you think is the best stadium? What do you think is the best fight song?
Right. There's no rhyme or reason for it, and there's no wrong answer.
No, there isn't. It's, well.
I do like what you were talking about with minor league baseball, though, and I see that a lot. At a major league game, there's more attention to the game, but you're right. And I've been to several minor league games, whether it's A-ball, triple A-ball, or whatever. It's more of an event than a game.
Yeah, and that's true, and that's very true.
And I think that's why that they have so many great promotions, because they realize that this is an event as well as a baseball game for most people.
Right. Yeah, and they understand. And they understand that. They try to take it, make it into 38 nights, like in the New York Penn League, 38 nights of entertainment. Reading, well, they play 144 games, it'll be 71 nights of entertainment. And, you know, and so they get that. And that's one of the reasons why I think minor league baseball has become so popular. And I think a big reason it's become so popular is that people have been able to... you know, go out, enjoy themselves. Oh, you know, we'll take in the ball game as well. The ball game gets to be pretty good. You know.
Bonus.
Yeah, it's a bonus. All right, tomorrow, Ross and Santa, MLB.com on the Major League Baseball Draft.